Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. Jacob Birch, Eric Steven. What a weird Dodgers team.
Yeah, it's weird times in Los Angeles. We got injuries, we got the trade deadline, and I was gonna, you know, I'll just do it since that's sort of it's one of the titles or the subtitles of the episode. I'm just gonna say, when you sure you've had enough. Because everybody hurts right now, and that's what we're going to talk about.
We should do a karaoke episode. No one wants that.
Oh, my God.
No one wants that.
Well, that'll be... We need to set up a Patreon for that to incentivize us to do such a thing. But
musical episode. All right. Well, we're going to catch up on the week ahead. We already looked at the trade deadline last week, but we'll talk a little bit about that. We've got a Dodgers Rewind. We have questions from Craig after this.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
How many times have the Dodgers this year gotten, like, amped and the hope is right because, the Dodgers are finally at full strength?
Yeah. Motion to cancel that phrase forever.
Seconded.
Yeah. And so they were really close because we recorded last Monday. It was an early record for us. Mookie Betts was in the early stages of this hip inflammation thing. But it was to a point where, like, Corey Seager was probably going to return against the Giants last week. So we're like, they're going to have, like, their full team back for the first time since, like, the fifth game of the season. And no, none of that happened. And in fact, many more people left instead. I'm just going to read this. In the Dodgers' 100th game of the season, this was on Saturday against the Rockies. This, starting with the cleanup position, this was 4-8 in their starting lineup on Saturday. Albert Pujols, first base. Austin Barnes, catcher, batting fifth for the first time since 2018. Sheldon Noisy at second base. Billy McKinney in right field. Luke Rayleigh in left field. They won that game. 1-0 on an Austin Barnes home run.
I mean, he's batting fifth. He's
yeah, exactly.
That's a slugging spot.
Why we finally unlocked the key to Austin Barnes.
Anytime anyone tells you lineup order, it doesn't matter. Just remind them that being inserted in the fifth spot gives you magic powers.
So one of the things about that lineup that was notable is you might be wondering if you're listening to this, probably not because you've watched, but if you just are binging our podcast and haven't watched the Dodgers in a while, you might remember that last week we had a bet based on one of the questions from Craig. Will the Dodgers trade for a player who plays for them before Friday's trade deadline? I said, no, it's not going to happen. And Jacob said yes. And literally 2 days after we recorded, they said, we're going to trade for a guy right now. And then Billy McKinney, he was traded for Wednesday, started Thursday, 8 days before the deadline. So Jacob wins. Congratulations. for that, you win nothing except, you know, obviously bragging
rights.
Billy McKinney is a lefty hitter, very bad against left-handed pitching, reasonably close to league average against right-handed pitching. Now, he rates well defensively, which makes the last 4 days watching him an adventure because He looked like he was on skates out there a few times, and like his first throw was a perfect like Raul Ibanez impression. It just slipped out of his hand. It was hilarious, but like, oh man. So, and he started all four games in right field because Mookie Betts, that hip inflammation, it just didn't really go away. It got worse, I guess. This is one of those things that's been nagging him all year that he's talked about. You know, he was never really specific with it until like right after the All-Star break. But at the time, so he was like, he was in a 12 for 16 stretch. He scored 12 runs in those four games. He had four extra base hits in the Saturday game at Coors Field and had to leave early because of the hip inflammation. And then unavailable the next day. The day we recorded the podcast, he was in the lineup, penciled in on that Monday game, but ultimately scratched. He was not in any of the lineups the rest of the week. The Dodgers were sort of buying time, putting him on the injured list, thinking, well, Mookie Betts could be ready for the next Dodgers-Giants series, which starts, we're recording this week on a Tuesday, it starts tonight in San Francisco. Finally, they sort of gave up that idea on Sunday because it just wasn't getting any better. They placed him on the injured list, which knocks him out through at least next weekend. The earliest he can come back is August 1st. Now, the Dodgers, during that time, they played with a short bench because they had Betts active but unavailable. And he did pinch hit Monday, but otherwise he really wasn't available. So they were willing to put up with it, obviously, for the hope that he'd be back this week. But also, who were they going to call up, right? Like, they had the 40-man sort of hitters that are, you know, potentially available to call up. Luke Rayleigh, Zach Rex, DJ Peters, those are outfielders. Sheldon Noisy's played a very little bit of outfield, but mostly an infielder. This in the majors this year, 172 plate appearances, 159, 233, 280 with a 40% strikeout rate. In July, three of those four have played in the majors, no DJ Peters. They're 1-for-21 with 12 strikeouts. I've gotten to the point where I don't believe any of those four players should bat again for the Dodgers this season. Not really giving on up on them long term, you know. But if they need to clear space on the 40-man roster, I know who I would choose. they have to upgrade. We'll get to that in a little bit. But like the only other real hitter on the roster, on the 40-man roster who's not in the majors, is Keber Ruiz. He had a three-homer game last week in a game that he also doubled off the wall for AAA. Baseball America's midseason prospect rankings came out yesterday, and he jumped all the way to 16th, the 16th best prospect in Major League Baseball. A huge jump. He was number 39, I think, in their last update. There's only two catchers ahead of him prospect-wise, Gabriel Moreno of the Blue Jays, who's younger, and Adley Rutschman of the Orioles, who was the number one pick a couple years ago. Ruiz just turned 23 last week. At this point, like, it's given the current roster, even if when people are healthy, I think it would be worth it just to call Ruiz up even as a hitter, even if the Dodgers don't want to play him at catcher, because they are pretty set with, obviously, Will Smith, like, all-star level type production, and Austin Barnes, who, you know, aside from the home run Saturday, has very little power, doesn't really hit much, but still, like, for a backup catcher, perfectly fine, and they absolutely adore his, like, game calling, pitch framing, all that kind of stuff. So he also does, like, I think still tied for the lead in catcher's interference, which is weird. But, like, I don't, you know, that's not a thing they're going to break up at this point. that's sort of where they're at. And then, you know, the position players, like, the depth has been sort of tested. They've sort of waited out, like, Cody Bellinger. So he's down right now on the season. He's hitting 161, 274, 282. Like, and it's like in a good amount of plate appearances, like 170-something, I think. There's 312 major league hitters with at least 150 plate appearances. Bellinger's 309th in average, 277th in on-base percentage, 305th in slugging. So just terrible all around. Now, he's been in the lineup because we talked about the other options are bad, but also he's very good still defensively in center field, and you've seen that, like, in the games he's played, tracking down balls, like, just improving the overall defense, you know, as opposed to some games where they've had, like, Mookie Betts in center and then someone lesser in one of the corners. It really, you can really sort of see the difference with Bellinger out there. And obviously, Bellinger has a track record, so they're just sort of being extremely patient with him, hoping things will turn around. Now, he was also 0 for 25 in a skid that was snapped Friday against the Rockies. He had, like, three hard hit balls. It was a double, a hard out. I forget where he hit it. But then he tripled off the wall, and then he left the game with another hamstring injury because that's how the season is going. Bellinger, like, really hasn't had a chance to, like, catch his breath, you know, without getting hurt this year. Basically, since November, he had the surgery to repair the shoulder that he dislocated, celebrating a pennant-winning home run, I might add, since people seem to forget that. He didn't play until, like, the final 2 weeks of spring training. Then he got hurt in the fifth game of the year, that aforementioned game, the last time the Dodgers had basically everyone they wanted on the active roster, position player-wise. He missed 46 games with that. When he came back, he played 12 games, and then after his first, after consecutive multi-hit games for the first time in this year, he strained his hamstring while avoiding, trying to avoid getting hit by a wild pitch, by the way. He missed 10 more games. He came back after that. This was like his first real extended playing time, but he didn't really, wasn't doing anything like we talked about. He finally had a multi-hit game in that stretch this Friday. That was his first one since returning. Then he was hurt again. He might be, he hasn't played, well, he pinch hit Sunday, but he hasn't started the last two games. If he's going to play the, I would imagine the first couple games back or whatever, he might play first base just to sort of ease him back in, which again affects things because, you know, Muncy has to play second base. Then you'll have someone else in the outfield, like Luke Rayleigh still on the active roster, for instance. They optioned Sheldon Noisy over on Monday. So yeah, it's a problem. So the setting for that Saturday, why the lineup was like it was, you know, Betts was still active at the time. Both he and Bellinger were unavailable. It was the day after Bellinger hurt his hamstring. The Dodgers only had 12 position players active on the roster. Until calling up Luke Rayleigh that morning. So that's 13. That only gives them 11 available position players on the roster. A part of that was also because Gavin Lux, right after we recorded last week, he went on the injured list with a hamstring strain, might be out for a little bit. Max Muncy was gone all weekend on paternity leave. He and his wife Kelly had a baby girl, Sophie Kate Muncy, on Friday. Adorable. So he was gone, and then Will Smith, Austin Barnes, they've split every single day-night split this season. So it was just, it was going to be one or the other sitting in that game, you know, with the other catching Sunday. Barnes got Saturday, Smith caught Sunday. They both homered, so kudos. Dave Roberts pulling all the right strings there. But the, it was the worst. I looked at that lineup, and I don't care about the lineup so much. People complain about it all the time. It's usually as long as the right players are in there. We knew, given the roster, all the right players were not going to be in there because they don't have all the right players. But I stared at it. It didn't even dawn on me until like I looked at it for a while that Austin Barnes was hitting fifth and Sheldon Noisy was hitting sixth. I was like, my God. Like, it's easily the worst lineup they had this year. It's probably the worst lineup they've had in like 3 years, maybe? I don't know. But yeah. Oh, and then the other thing is that Corey Seager, who we talked about, like, still, like, in limbo. And it's really, they said they're waiting for the green light, basically, from the training staff. They haven't got it. He's been working out, doing all the pregame stuff, batting. Just hasn't been greenlit by the training staff. He's going to be at Camelback Ranch while the Dodgers are on the road. They're in Arizona this weekend, so they'll sort of match up there. But he's probably going to go on a rehab assignment now. So this is his 11th week since getting hit by a pitch. And it's probably going to be into that 12th week until he's, like, close to returning. So it's been incredibly frustrating for, like, everyone involved there. So yeah, it's been a rough go, you know, in terms of like getting a lot of the lineup both active and healthy. So yeah, kind of weird.
So all of that led to certainly not a good looking week, but the results not good, but also not the depths of despair that were those really long losing streaks earlier in the season, at least so far.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's hard, you know, you forget, like last year it was 60 games, and then obviously the postseason, but like, man, it really has been a long time. It's weird how you sort of forgot how long a baseball season is. So it's hard to sometimes look back or get like that broad overview because you're so immersed in like the day-to-day stuff. They still have like, I think it's the second best record in the National League. They have, I think the Red Sox are the only team ahead of them in the American League. They have the best run differential in the majors. They're two games back of the Giants. So obviously not exactly where they want to be, but still like relatively doing very good. Like, but they did lose 4 of 7 last week. They dropped 3 of 4 to the Giants. And the way they dropped them was like especially frustrating because Kenley Jansen blew 2 straight saves the last 2 games of the series. And that was after he blew the save Sunday in Colorado. So this had, I will say this, that the second blown save included like 2 just weird plays. One was a force out like to Chris Taylor to Sheldon Noisy at second base. Could have been the second or the third out of the game, excuse me, or the inning ending the game. Sheldon Noisy did not move at second base to the point where Dave Roberts uncharacteristically sort of, I hesitate to say called somebody out because he didn't even mention Noisy by name. But it was as far as he'll go in terms of criticizing someone publicly. And he just said, if we stretch there, we win. So, and that was true. But then also, Kenley Jansen to Darren Ruff. Darren Ruff did not check his swing. They checked to first base umpire, and he said he did check his swing on ball 4. Now, as bad as that was, it was also really ball 5 in that at bat. But one of those was called a strike. So just a very frustrating game all around. But Dave Roberts got ejected in each of those games and just kind of blew his gasket a little bit on Thursday. But yeah, it was rough in many regards. What?
Nothing.
Oh, Darren Ruff. Damn it. Uh-huh. Yeah. Good call. I didn't even see it. It was right there. But yeah, you're right. Like, so they had that 5-15 stretch in April and May. And a lot of the same things were going on. Like, you know, poor offense, putting the bullpen in a bad spot to begin with. So there's like literally no margin for error. So any screw up is going to be magnified. And then injuries leading you to use guys on the depth chart you normally wouldn't. So you have like, you know, like Darian Nunez blew the save in the 8th inning on Friday against the Rockies. And then the Dodgers ended up losing in the 10th. Then, like, it was just a tense week overall. The Dodgers, they won in comeback fashion in the 9th on Tuesday. They lost in the 9th the next 2 nights. They lost in the 10th on Friday. And then Saturday was a 1-0 win. Sunday was a 3-2 win. So, like, every single game was tense. That's sort of where we're at. Now, I want to say this. Even with that bad stretch, it's still, like generally good. Like even in July, they're leading the league in like home runs and runs scored, and they, you know, they had that crazy 22 inning game or 22 run game, excuse me, right before the break. Even if you take that out, they're still averaging just over 5 runs a game. So like they're still kind of humming along even with like a lot of people missing and things. So there's a lot to like there. That said, given all these sort of question marks, I think they definitely need to add a position player. Not exactly sure who, like just to sort of shore up so you don't have to use those guys we mentioned or Yeah, it's just been rough. So I think that's sort of where they're at right now.
So yeah, let's review, where do we stand on how the Dodgers, like you mentioned that there's no one else to call up, and if you look at the 40 man, that's the case. So what are the Dodgers looking at for if they want an extra bat?
Okay, so let's just on the current roster, like let's even if like Mookie Betts, Cody Bellinger, and Corey Seager are all back and healthy, like reasonably soon, I think they're still in a position to add a position player. So, you know, catchers, you got Smith and Barnes active, and then Gabriel Ruiz is right there. He's a switch hitter. You figure they're probably going to go two catchers. So, like, Ruiz calling him up as an extra hitter is an option, but it's one I'm not, like, convinced they'll do just yet. I mean, he's going to be called – Ruiz is going to be called up in September when they expand to 28 players, but outside of that, I don't see them sort of jumping to that. But, like, just looking at the rest of the sort of roster, right-handed batters – currently active, Chris Taylor, Justin Turner, A.J. Pollock, Albert Pujols. That's four. Mookie Betts makes five when he's back. The lefties, it's Max Muncy, Zach McKinstry, Billy McKinney, Matt Beatty, Cody Bellinger. That's five. Seager and Lux make seven. So, and again, ignoring for the moment Rayleigh, Noisy, Rex, and Peters, that's 12 non-catchers, right? Out, you know, and then you have Betts, Seager, Lux all available. You still need to count on at least one of McKinney, McKinstry, and Beatty. I wrote about this in the offseason where when I said they needed more position player help, it was because I didn't think they were comfortable going with McKinstry and Beatty as being active, both active as plan A. I still kind of think that's in an ideal case where they, you know, they wouldn't have to use both of those guys. So I think, and also you can't really count on all these guys being healthy.
Right.
So I do think they're going to end up getting another bat in some capacity. The versatility helps in that, you know, you can get almost a position player anywhere. And then just move everyone around. The one like weird thing about that, I know Chris Bryant's like the biggest name out there, but like, you know, third base and outfield, but he's not playing third with Turner. Like, is he? I mean, to really commit to an outfielder, let's say Betts is healthy reasonably soon. Pollock's healthy. Bryant's right-handed, so it's not like a platoon thing with Pollock. Do you platoon with Bellinger at that point? Like, with him sort of still scuffling? I think it would take that sort of commitment to get that kind of a player, or like that sort of decision to get to that. But, I do think it's going to be more of the, like an ancillary type, someone they can count on, maybe an infielder, who knows? I haven't really looked at all the options to be honest, but they almost have to is a strong word, but I think they will get a position player. We talked about, you know, pitchers last week. The need still holds. The current rotation has David Price, who's been excellent and, like, you know, continues to stretch out. Tony Gonsolin pitching better, but still, like, and then Josiah Gray was impressive in his debut. He gave up some home runs but missed a lot of bats. Having those three guys in the rotation, obviously Clayton Kershaw could be back within a couple weeks, but I think in an ideal situation, you probably have David Price in the bullpen. The pitching needs still there. I think that's still sort of in the same spot. Jimmy Nelson in the bullpen was activated Sunday. Corey Knebel started a rehab assignment, so he's like, you know, within a few weeks of returning. So they're getting... Again, never say full strength because that's never going to happen. But like, you can see the like where they're sort of lining up to go. So I still think it holds. Like Friday's trade deadline, I would expect them to get a starting pitcher, at least one reliever, and one position player. That's sort of where I'm at right now. But yeah, Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific is the is the trade deadline, so I'm sure next week's episode we'll have a lot to talk about in terms of who they got.
I'm looking for it. It'll assuming they do what we think they'll do, it'll be a fun one to talk about.
Yeah. The one, I think Blake Karras on our site wrote about this, sort of mentioning the one blockbuster that they could do. He wants them to get Craig Kimbrell, Chris Bryant, and Zach Davies in a big deal with the Cubs. Now, we've talked about Zach Davies a little bit. He walks everybody, doesn't strike out anybody. Thoroughly unimpressive. Not really the innings either they need at all. But I wonder, in that kind of a deal, like, do you just do that because you're getting Kimbrell and Bryant? Like,
right.
And you figure out the rest, like, you know. So yeah, I that seems a little rich for my blood. I don't think it's necessarily realistic, but yeah, that's sort of where we're at.
All right, you got. I know we're about to go to a break, but I think you probably have a trivia question for me.
Yeah, we mentioned Cody Bellinger's struggles through Monday. His OPS plus is 54 this season in 175 plate appearances. I think I was one off when I mentioned it above or earlier. Since moving to Los Angeles, how many Dodgers have had a 54 OPS plus or worse in a season of at least 200 plate appearances? And a bonus question: who had the worst OPS plus by a Dodger?
All right.
LA Dodger. Excuse me.
I will. I'll give that a shot after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With a minimum of 200 plate appearances, how many Dodgers, LA Dodgers, have had, since moving to LA,
mm-hmm.
How many Dodgers have had a 54 OPS plus or worse?
Yep.
Let's go 17.
Man, you're really close. I think I'm giving, this is within the, error bars or whatever you want to say. It's 15.
Okay.
Close enough. Now, I will tell you, the three players right at 54 are Steve Yeager, 1980, Logan Forsyth, 2018, and then Mike Davis, World Series hero in 1988. It's a terrible regular season, but he made up for it. Now, I will tell you the worst OPS plus is 35. Do you have a guess on who?
So I committed to my guess, and then I loaded the player's baseball reference page, and I believe I'm looking at it, and I believe it's 35. Andrew Jones.
That is one of them.
Oh,
yes. So
this is a tricky man.
No, but you got it right. But I actually was kind to you in this respect that I actually gave you two chances to get a right answer,
mm-hmm.
so
mm-hmm.
speak with that. This is the opposite of the Monty Hall problem, I believe. you know what? I take it back. There's actually three.
Whoa.
I glossed over the other one. So the one with the most plate appearances of this group is John Shelby, T-Bone, in 1989. 35 OPS plus in 371 plate appearances. My God. Now, I will say the only one here with qualified at-bats was Alfredo Griffin, the legend. 1990, a 44 OPS plus in 502 plate appearances. 210, 258, 254. Oh, this was 2 years after he hit 199 with the Dodgers and a 50 OPS plus. So he is a true legend on this list. But the other person on the 35 OPS plus club, Juan Castro, 1998. I believe, I got to look this up. He's a four-time Dodger, I think, as a player. I think that's right. I guess it's three. I think I was counting four because of, like, when he left in 2010 but signed again as a free agent. But I, that's continuous to me. So I think, yeah, only a three-time Dodger. But, yeah.
No, this question was very evocative of when you and I put together a list of what are the Dodger roster evocative of the movie Major League, where we it was minimum 100 plate appearances, I think, with a war of one or less. So I Juan Castro is who I was like, there was another player in the 90s, and I was like trying to remember who it was that when we talked about that list came up. I was between him and Andrew Jones, and good to know either would have worked.
The only other people in the 2000s on this list, Cesar Asturias in 2002 with a 51 OPS plus. He turned it around, made an all-star team for that. Jerry Hairston Jr. In 2013, a 53 OPS plus. I will say, back to Asturias for a second, he had 468 plate appearances in 2002, so that's rough. That's the other Chad Fonville is on this list, 1996, video game stolen base legend. It's rough.
Man, you talk about Darren Ruff once, and you keep going to that well.
It is, yeah, and you implanted it in my brain because I wasn't even thinking about it. So,
you got a Dodgers rewind for us?
You know what? I do. Okay. So Sunday was the 40th anniversary of the 1981 World Series winning team, at least the celebration of it at Dodger Stadium. They had like a breakfast that morning, and then they honored a lot of players on the field. A lot of players actually showed up to this. The one that we're going to talk about is one I forgot who was even on that team, was Candy Maldonado. He was a rookie that year, 1-for-12 in September. He debuted 2 days after his 21st birthday. Now, I looked, I was at the game on Sunday, and I had written down, like, all the players who played in the World Series that year, 25 in all. Maldonado did not play in the World Series, but he was there. There were other people on the team, but of the 25, 13 players showed, plus 5 others who didn't play in the World Series. Now, 5 of the players on that team have died. Steve Howe, Bob Welch, Bobby Castillo, Joe Beckwith, and Jay Johnstone. Dusty Baker and Mike Socia were managing, so they didn't come. Mike Socia in the Olympics. Dave Stewart, we talked about this a couple podcasts ago. He declined the invite from the Dodgers because he did not like the way they haven't distanced themselves from Trevor Bauer. Bob Nightingale wrote a piece about that. He was very angry about the situation. And then in the Nightingale piece, he also mentioned that Davey Lopes wasn't attending for various reasons. I don't know if they're kind of feuding at the moment, Lopes and the Dodgers. The only other no-shows on at least from the World Series players were Dave Golts, Terry Forster, and Reggie Smith. The latter was a little bit of a surprise. I wasn't sure why. Smith was an honorary coach at the All-Star game a couple weeks ago. He's on good standing with the organization, so maybe it was just a scheduling thing. Who knows? But yeah, so back to Maldonado for a second. They signed him out of Puerto Rico. He was 17 in 1978. He tore up the minors. He was the co-MVP of the Cal League in 1980 in Lodi. He had 2 great years in AAA Albuquerque. In 1981, the year he made his debut with Albuquerque, he was .335, .398, .598. It was 40 doubles, 21 homers, 9 triples. Mike Marshall that year famously won the Triple Crown. And then the Dodgers media guide in 1984, I was reading up on this, they referred to the Maldonado and Marshall that year as the M&M duo, which is sort of a play on the Mantle and Maris thing, which is kind of fun. So from 1980 to 1982, Maldonado hit .313 in the minors. He averaged 23 homers, 32 doubles, 101 RBIs, and 87 runs. In the minors in 1982, this is like I Can't believe I caught this, but this was his second year in AAA, still only 21. He stole 4 bases and was caught 18 times. the confidence and the green light to have that sort of freedom to just continue to run has to be amazing. We'll get to another stolen base quirk from him in a second.
No.
Yeah. So he had cups of coffee in September in 81 and 82. He started to get regular playing time in 1983. I think he made the team out of spring training, but you know, didn't play a ton that year. He was a semi-regular in 84 and 85, 513 total plate appearances and 10 homers in those 2 years, 89 OPS plus, so-so. He played all 3 outfield spots, but mostly in the corners. He was, you know, they played him in center field sometimes because they had to. He played in the NLCS in 1983, 1985. He started twice in 1985. In those postseasons, he was a combined 1-for-9. Didn't do much. At the winter meetings in 1985, they traded him to the Giants for catcher Alex Trevino. Now, I thought this was hilarious. Dodgers general manager Al Campanis inadvertently broke the news of the Maldonado trade at a press conference for a different trade. This was during the winter meetings. So the Dodgers had just traded catcher Steve Yeager to the Mariners for left-handed pitcher Ed Vandenberg. This is from the UPI news story the next day. Quote, Campanis mentioned he was unable to contact Yeager and outfielder Candy Maldonado about being dealt. Maldonado, what did he have to do with this? The embarrassed Campanis was then informed his club had not announced a trade for Maldonado, and the crowd roared. First of all, I'm envisioning that. Like, how big of a crowd was it to have a roar? Now, it's the winter meeting, so there's probably a lot of people there, but it's still. And then Campanis sort of joked, I'm new at this sort of thing. At that time, Campanis was the club's director of player personnel for the last 17 years, so it was pretty funny. But yeah, they did later announce the trade that day for Maldonado as well. Now, it was good for Maldonado in that he sort of got regular playing time after that. The next 7 years, he averaged 129 games, 487 plate appearances, 25 doubles, 16 homers. He averaged 1.7 baseball reference WAR during that time per year. He, with the Dodgers in parts of 5 years, he was actually had negative WAR, -0.8 to be exact. But yeah, it was kind of neat. I did not expect him to be at the 81 ceremony. Another player they was there was Mark Bradley, and I was like, oh, okay. I don't associate him with like the 81 team necessarily, but yeah, it was nice. Pedro Guerrero was there. They had a bunch of people there, so it was kind of cool to see everybody. But I do have a Candy Maldonado trivia question for you.
Yeah, I've been not looking forward to this one.
It's not about his AAA stolen base rate, which is amazing. 4 steals, 18 caught stealing. But in 1983, in the majors, Candy Maldonado was 0-for-3 in stolen base attempts. MLB started tracking caught stealing officially in 1951. Who has the Dodgers record for most caught stealing in a season with 0 stolen bases?
So I've been dreading this because it's similar to me trying to remember the other low OPS plus player. I know this is, yeah, as they say, in the punch bowl. It's in my brain somewhere, and I am unable to pluck it out.
Yeah. Do you have any sort of stab?
I got. It would literally just be me picking.
What if I give you the year?
If you give me a year, I will take maybe a guess. Maybe.
2005.
Oh, that's a bad year for me to take a stab.
There were a lot of potential answers on that.
I'm gonna admit defeat.
Oscar Robles, okay. Who is head and shoulders above the rest. Now, the aforementioned Mike Marshall is second on this list with 5 caught stealings and no steals in 1987 with the Dodgers. But the leader, Oscar Robles, 8 caught stealings in 2005 without a steal. Jim Tracy just giving him the green light the whole year. Some others in the ones with 4: Casey Blake, Andre Ethier, Dave Anderson, Ron Say, Ron Fairley in the 3 group. James Loney, Mike Piazza, Mike Socha. And then Tom Holler. 3 of those are catchers. Understandable. And then Candy Maldonado in 84. So those are your offer on steals.
Player like Ethier is where my brain was going. Not specifically Ethier, but someone that not necessarily known as a speedster, but not someone that wasn't slow, but someone who definitely wasn't a stolen base expert, but more importantly, someone that would have demanded the playing time to get the opportunities to do so. And in 05, that did include a lot of players. So the fact that it was 05, not surprising in the least. Hey, you know what time it is?
I have an idea.
It's time for...
Questions from Craig.
Five questions, some of them multi-part, from our friend Craig.
I saw him at the game on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Sunday against the Rockies. Craig, as well as former, or still friend of the show, former True Blue LA writer Phil Gurney. They were both at the game. Phil wanted to go see the 81 team, so that was cool. But yeah, we hung out for a couple innings. It was great. Yeah, two of the best people, so it was fun. And now I'm anxious to see what Craig is going to stump me with.
I'm very jealous you got to hang out with that crew.
Yep.
All right, here we go. I will exact my jealousy with reading Craig's trivia questions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Closing out the month, so here are some questions about slugging Dodgers in July. First, AJ Pollock has a 1.155 OPS in 77 plate appearances so far in July. Can Eric name the four Dodgers since 1995 who have a better OPS with a minimum of 50 plate appearances?
So I'm mad that this starts in 1985. I'm pretty sure Pedro Guerrero's July 1985 still is over that. His June is the more famous one. He hit 15 home runs, but he also got on base at a ridiculous rate still in July, even without the home runs, and had a crazy month. That's just my way of stalling. I'm just spitballing here. I want to say Cody Bellinger.
You would be wrong.
One of these. Oh, damn it. Let's go Mike Piazza.
Nope.
Now you're just lying. Matt Kemp.
Nope.
July.
Man, this may be the longest Ofer streak for your... Usually you rattle one or two off at least off the bat.
Yeah. The problem is, like, I don't associate... Like, oh man, remember that July? You know, I don't know.
I'll give you years. How about that?
Yeah, okay.
2000.
Well, I'm going to say Sheffield first.
There you go. He's third on this list with a 1.180 OPS.
Yeah. Some people just say 1180. That's fine.
Nope. I want to be exacting. All right. Jeff Kent.
Got it. Wait, you just...
Wait, 2007. Can you guess?
I was going to guess the year after you said that, but I wouldn't have guessed 2007, so you stumped again.
I know. I want a name. Who is 2007?
Let's go with Jeff Kent.
Hey, you got it. Dang it. 1237. I think Jeff Kent would have been up there on your guesses. So.
I disagree.
Okay, 2018. Look at me not say player names.
Eight. 18. Okay, so Seager's hurt that year. This is why when I said Bellinger, I was thinking either 2017 when he was the rookie or 2019.
Mm-hmm.
I think more 2017 because I think that's when his cycle was. But now 2018, man. Let's say Justin Turner.
Nope.
Justin
Turner would have been my first guess on this question too.
So Matt Kemp was an all-star that year, but I believe he faded. Max Muncy?
Nope. I'll give you one more hint. This player is currently not on the Dodgers, but is currently active in Major League Baseball.
So did he have enough plate appearances after the trade deadline? Because it was during the All-Star game. Let's say Manny Machado.
The answer is Yasmani Grandal.
Duh. Okay.
Next one I think will be easy once I give you the year 2004.
Beltre.
There you go.
Yeah. Adrian Beltre to be.
Oh. Okay. Chris Taylor and AJ Pollock have 53 and 51 total bases this month. I'm asking Eric to name the four Dodgers since 1995 who had 62 or more stolen bases in July. One of those total players bases, yeah. did it twice. And I will give little sneak peek. Only one repeat name from the last list.
Well, I'm going back to the well on this one, and I'm going to say Mike Piazza.
Nope.
You said one repeat?
From the last list, yes.
Sheffield.
There you go. Number five with 65 stolen bases.
Total bases, yeah. Not steals. So... Okay.
I'm just going to keep saying stolen bases.
That's fair. Let's go to... Ethier?
Nope.
Matt Kemp? No. Yeah. Matt Kemp.
No, not Matt Kemp.
Okay. All right. Going back to the well again, since he wasn't an answer. Cody Bellinger?
Nope. Man, this feels good.
Yeah, I...
This makes up for the fact that I can't read questions anymore.
I don't know.
That's my go-to answer.
Yeah.
Number one on this list with 73, Eric Karros, in 1999. Raul Mondesi is the player on here twice with 68 in 97 and 66 in 98. And then Hanley Ramirez, 2013 with 67 total bases.
Makes sense.
Did you see how I said total bases?
I saw.
Learning on the fly. Five Dodgers since 1995 have a 471 on-base percentage. In July, there's again minimum 50 plate appearances. Three have been named already. Let's see if Eric can name the other two. Mm-hmm. The three that have been named are Sheffield, Kent, and Grandal.
Okay. I'm going back to the well just because he had such a high average in a couple of those years. Let's say Mike Piazza.
Nope.
All right.
I'm going to give you a year 2007.
2007. Okay. So, James Loney?
Nope.
Why? This is bad. I'm doing badly. I don't know anything about July.
Given the year and the era, this name should not be surprising.
Okay. So they still weren't good. Ethier.
There you go. Ethier with 471 on base percentage. Sheffield, by the way, was 509. In 2000. All right, the last name, I'm going to give you one year, I'm going to give you the year and one guess, and then I'm going to move on because I don't want to have to wait for you to pull this name. 1999.
99. Man. Todd Hundley.
Devin White.
Devon, yeah. Wow.
All right, last one. I believe in you on this one. Max Muncy returns to the team against the Giants with 21 RBIs in July. Five Dodgers since 1985 have had 22 or more. In July, the leader drove in 27 twice.
Mm-hmm. Karros?
Is the leader twice with 27 in 97 and 99. I'll give you one of the years, 2004.
Beltre?
There you go. Be nice. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say Sean Green.
Sean Green with 22 in 2001. You got two names to go. I'm going to ask you to go to the well one more time.
Matt Kemp?
Nope. Ron Well.
Piazza.
There you go. He finally shows up on this list.
I'm missing one still?
You are missing one. 1998.
Oh, 98. Oof. let's see. Let's go to Mondesi again.
There you go. There we go. Yeah. We just needed to get you to RBIs. Jeez. You're an RBI. You believe in the RBI stat.
That's true.
We need to get to a pitcher's wins question, and you'll be fine.
I hate July now. what a dumb month this is.
I'm sure Craig's going to do it for August, and you'll just ace all of them, because you'll just say Justin Turner or something.
All I'm going to do next week is look up August stuff and then just have it
ready.
He'll
be ready for the Devin Whites of August. The Dodgers currently have three qualified hitters, Muncy, Turner, and Betts, with a .500 slugging percentage. The most that they have ever had was in 2019 when they had four players do that, Bellinger, Muncy, Jock, and Justin Turner. For the contest, will the 2021 team match or surpass the 2019? Note that Chris Taylor and Will Smith are close. AJ Pollock has a .515 slugging, but isn't qualified. He may not even get enough plate appearances. I think just given the health of this team, no.
They're just good. Right. So I just want to look up just to see where those other guys are. Of course, why wouldn't the browser work? That's great. My Google Chrome is pulling a July on me and just screwing me over here. So Will Smith, .486. Chris Taylor now at .497. I don't know when Craig wrote this. Oh no, he said close, right?
Yeah, he said close.
But
not at.
Yeah. Okay. So four guys. Turner's .507. Pollock's not going to get there. He has 256 plate.
We've mentioned this a little bit before, but I love that Betts is one of the three, considering how the mantra of his is. What a disappointing season.
Yeah. It's the old, 34 years old, the last of his kind in the sport. What a tragedy that he's like still playing or whatever, or I don't know what I screwed up the tweet, but you know what I mean.
Yep.
Wow. So will they get four players to .500 slugging in qualified? So Pollock's a no go because he's not going to qualify. Will Smith might not qualify, but he'll be close.
Mm-hmm.
So you're basically betting on Turner to stay there, Betts to stay there, and then Taylor to get there because no one else is going to qualify. So I'm going to say no.
Yep. All right. No bets for us.
You also said no.
I did. Yeah. And I beat you to it.
I'm
going to
note it.
So.
Yep. So Jacob said no first. I followed like a beta that I am. No, I'm just kidding. Okay.
Looking at the Brewers, I was surprised to see the ordinary season Christian Yelich is having. Not quite as poor as Cody Bellinger, but still not what we saw in past seasons. Given that, the Brewers may have the best pitching in the league. Do you see them acquiring another bat this week to help their offense?
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Not a big bat. How about that?
Yeah. Makes sense.
Well, the big events can be compelling to watch every 4 years when the Olympics roll around. I enjoy things like synchronized diving and fencing. Are there any Olympic events you two enjoy, even if you only watch it every 4 years?
My Olympic viewing tends to be whatever's on when I'm home. I haven't gone out of my way to watch anything. That said, last night, we're recording this on Tuesday, I could not sleep. I did set my alarm, for like 3:45 just to, in case I was up or, you know, wanted to be up to watch, women's gymnastics, this morning. But I ended up, I could not sleep for like 90 minutes, and it was about 1 a.m., and that's when the women's soccer team, U.S. women's soccer team was playing. So I watched the first half of their game before falling asleep, and it screwed up my whole night, and I slept through that gymnastics alarm and then woke up later this morning and recorded podcasts. So apologies if I sound tired. But yeah, it's more like it's just kind of whatever's on, basically. when I'm home, and you know, I'll move around and stuff. But there's been a lot of, and a lot of stuff is just on in the background, like either on mute while I'm watching a game or listening to a podcast or something. So I'm like, I've been like half paying attention to it. But yeah, it's just like whatever's kind of on. I don't know. I don't. It's hard to say, like really connected to it as much, but I do watch it. It's just, you know, I don't have any specific events.
I have, because I don't have cable following, you know, I have a rabbit ear, so I can get NBC itself, but all the other channels, not so much. So I've been not super plugged in, but my understanding is they're removing my favorite Olympic sport, which is race walking.
Race walking is great, just because it's hilarious. I mean, it's competitive, obviously, but like, it's great because the referees are so invasive.
Yeah, aggressive.
They run up to you. It's like imagine a soccer red card, but like it's a referee running up to your face as you're walking. Like you made a violation, and then. And it's because, you know, you can't have, what's the rule? You can't have like your both feet off the ground or something.
Yeah.
They're like watching these guys like hawks, and it's amazing. And that's like as much of an event as the event is itself. So like, I do sort of love that, but that's like one of those things that it's just, you know, if it's, when it's on, it's on. And if it, I'm not going to be like, oh, walking's on tonight. Like I'm not going to, you know, go out of my way to watch it, I guess.
I have to go take my car in for maintenance on that theme. I read an article on best places to stop on a drive from LA to Las Vegas, and it had me wondering, on car trips, do you plan on specific places to stop on your way? For instance, the last time I went to Vegas, I stopped at Cracker Barrel going and coming back home. And when I went to spring training, I knew I was getting a date shake near Morongo Casino. Is it In-N-Out, the gas station complex near at the border near Blythe, or anything else come to mind? So I did, you know, nerdy competitive card games for a while, which involved a lot of road trips. So I got really good at doing this. And, you know, it depends on what time of day you were leaving. But for the most part, you know, to just kill the monotony, you wanted to have something to look forward to every hour and a half. And, you know, sometimes that was just a clean gas station bathroom, but sometimes it was notable items. So yeah, no, this happened all the time, but the drive between Denver and Kansas City is one that I have really mapped out, because it's an extremely boring drive and it's a very straight drive, but somehow, despite it being straight and not very hilly, some of the better stops are just far enough off the highway where you wouldn't know, oh, I can exit here and get, go to the Cozy Inn to get incredibly good sliders, as you and I know have talked about. There's also, I think, the best old-fashioned soda fountain, ice cream soda fountain, is in Quinter, Kansas. And another place you wouldn't know isn't right off the highway if you didn't know to look for it. So I accumulate these places. So it's definitely one of my favorite part of road tripping.
The ones I can remember are almost all off right off the highway. That said, so the most common for me are the spring training trips. Even though now looking back, I haven't been to spring training since 2019, but like that trip is like a 6-hour drive, and it's usually there's a bathroom involved. But like the go tos for me on the way out is the George Patton Museum. There's like a big like gas station truck stop there, like a pretty big convenience store to like fill up on drinks or snacks or whatever, and a bathroom. And then there are, you know, and then it's after that, it's like various, usually Blythe or right near the Arizona-California border. One of those places is like a, you know, it's really a pick your poison, like lunch thing. There's a barbecue place. I think it's called Rebel Barbecue in Blythe. That's decent. I mean, it's, you know, it's not Kansas City barbecue, obviously, but like, you know, whatever. Right. But it's a place. And then, but yeah, it's just like stuff like that. Now, on some family road trips, like either driving to Mesquite, Nevada. Almost all the stops involve just getting out of the car and stretching, you know, and that's usually like, you know, stopping at even a McDonald's to just like sit for a little bit or just, you know, stretch and then just relax for a second and then eat a quick bite and then get back into the car and go. When I go to Arizona, like, I forget exactly where, but it's in Arizona, a rest stop, just the same thing, bathroom, stretch, just sort of unwind for a second before hitting the road again. That's
knowing where the clean bathrooms are. And that's why when you're in certain places, like if you're in Texas, you'll be aware of Buc-ee's, which are, have you been to a Buc-ee's?
I haven't, but I've heard of them.
Yeah, they're ridiculous. But also reliable clean bathrooms. Similarly, if you're in my neck of the woods.
Quick Trip.
Or in Arizona, Quick Trip. Almost, I think maybe I went into a Quick Trip bathroom once and it was like not the cleanest. Generally, very well maintained. Very.
Yeah. For a convenience store bathroom, there's no guesswork.
Yeah.
Like you're not.
Versus. This has always bothered me about. A part of the country dominated by cars, Southern California, maybe this has changed. You don't have that. Like 7-Elevens don't reliably usually don't even have a bathroom that can use.
Exactly. Like I live within, maybe a couple mile radius of something like 6 7-Elevens or something. It's like an insane number. And like none of them have a bathroom the public can use, right? Like, and only a few of these type places do. It is very odd in that respect. But
so like In-N-Out almost ends up being your reliable, somewhat clean bathroom.
Yeah,
and even then, they're so popular that who knows? Depends on the timing.
That said, the In-N-Out closest to me, right around the corner, like a little
shack ones,
and so they don't have a bathroom. Oh, you know what? They do have but it's like a disconnected outdoor secondary building thing. But it's still, but again, relatively clean in terms of how that goes. There are, if you have a bad like bathroom trip. Like in terms of like the bathroom being not clean or otherwise, you tend to write that place off forever. Yeah. And for instance, I am never going to the Del Taco bathroom off of the El Toro exit. Is it El Toro or? Oh my God! I forgot the other exit. It's the one just south of El Toro. Alicia, on Interstate 5 in Mission Viejo, never ever going into that bathroom again for reasons I will not disclose. you see familiar places all the time. In September, my family and I were having a mini family reunion in Palm Springs. Now that's not that far of a drive. I will be, I'm told, chauffeuring both of my brothers. I think we're meeting up at my brother Kelly's house. My brother Greg's flying out from Baltimore on Wednesday night, and then Thursday morning I'll be the one driving to Palm Springs. That's not necessarily a trip that requires a stop, but like it's one of those like I do. Given that I used to live in Palm Springs, there's all sorts of places. If we had to stop either to get something to drink or do whatever, like there's 22nd Street in Banning. There's like you hit all the sort of. You just know like where to stop. I guess Casino Morongo now is a thing because they have a pretty big like gas station. But you just sort of know sort of the places to stop. So yeah, it's a thing, and it's just. But again, I haven't like driven a ton in the last like year and a half. So like I'm sort of out of that mode right now in terms of like I get in my car, go to point A to point B, and that's about it, like, right now. So, like, I haven't been in the I need to stop mode for a while. But I sort of enjoy it is not the right word, but I do sort of like it as sort of as part of the experience. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty neat.
Well, that wraps up a week.
Yeah, and next week we're going to have likely a few new Dodgers to talk about. You've already won one bet regarding that, so congratulations. And we'll talk to you next week, everybody, and see what new Dodgers we'll talk about. Have a good one.